Thanks for listening to Outcast World. You lock your front door, don't you? You wouldn't go out and leave the front door open. Well, that's essentially what you're doing when you're not using a VPN. Right now, your data is being tracked, stored, and sold by loads of people. For a lot of people that are listening to this show, that is not just annoying, it can also be very risky. NordVPN fixes it. It's fast, it's reliable, it's number one for consumers, and it takes less time to set up than ordering a takeaway. Outcast World listeners can get NordVPN for under £3 a month. That is up to 75% off. Just go to outcastworld.net. The link's at the top. Turn it on. Forget about it. Make yourself safer online with the number one NordVPN for under £3 a month at outcastworld.net. This is Outcast World. I'm Graham Smith, and I have had COVID for the last 6 days, and it's been I've found myself again. I found Jesus. No, I haven't actually, but I have spoke to somebody that found Jesus. So if you're LGBTQ+, chances are that you've already had your moment with religion, whether you were hurt by it, whether you walked away from it, or whether you're still trying to make peace with it, or whether you just looked at it and thought, that's not for me. Right now, the Church of England is in the middle of what we will politely call a storm. It's in a perma-storm. It's after years of debate, protests, and heartbreak over its stance on queer inclusion. The General Synod, that is the body that governs the church, has just met again. It's like a parliament, but a churchy parliament. Imagine being queer and in that parliament. Imagine being queer and HIV positive and in that parliament. That puts you in a very interesting position. Anyway, what happened this time at the Synod? There were some half steps, some mixed messages, just the usual stuff when you get, you know, democracy, and democracy mixing kind of with religion. You've got a church still trying to bless LGBTQ+ people without fully accepting us. So we wanted to speak to that person who was inside the room, and by a room, I mean a massive room full of people from all over the world, all kinds of different Anglicans from the kind of like liberal wing of the Anglican church that you get in the kind of northeastern United States, and we get a bit in the UK, to the more, let's call them, culturally conservative wings of the Anglican movement. Philip Baldwin is the man that we needed on the inside. He's gay, he's living with HIV, and he sits on the Synod of the Church of England itself. It's hard to overstate how rare that is. And I had a conversation with him about what happened at that meeting, but also about what it feels like to be fighting for your place in an institution that sees you as a debate and not always as a person. Philip is honest, he's thoughtful, he's a lovely guy. You're going to really enjoy this. He doesn't shy away from the complexity. He has stayed inside the church, not because it's been easy, but because somebody had to. Here's my chat with him. So welcome to the show today. An incredibly interesting person with a huge background in activism and places that you would never imagine LGBTQ+ people being in 2025, but he's there making his way. Philip Baldwin joins me. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here. You mentioned a bit about my campaigning. A writer and LGBTQA+ activist, and that covers everything from HIV to broader human rights topic. I suppose what makes me unusual is that I'm gay, living with HIV and Christian. So I do a lot of work around faith inclusion. And as you said, that does sometimes take me to some unusual places. And in 2021, I was elected to the Church of England's General Synod, which is its equivalent of a parliament. So it's not necessarily where you might expect to find a gay man who is openly HIV positive.
So, that's an incredible summary there. And just to think about that, it really is quite a thing that you're in there in the seat of power in the Church of England, the established church in this country. I'm not going to lie, my take on religion, and this is from, I was brought up Catholic. I was a choir boy in the cathedral choir in Liverpool, went to the cathedral choir school, was in mass and in church 4 to 5 days a week. I do see the benefits of an inclusive form of Christianity, but that's not always the experience of people, is it? How have you found being an openly gay man in that kind of rather conservative and religious space?
terms of my personal journey with faith, it's been very empowering for me. Following my HIV diagnosis, I started attending churches close to where I live, and they were inclusive of LGBTQIA plus people. So, and they were also inclusive of people living with HIV. And I was actually confirmed in 2015 at Southwark Cathedral, which houses the UK's only HIV AIDS chapel. So I've had a lot of positive experiences with the church, but I encountered a lot of negativity following my election to the General Synod, and I'm often exposed to homophobic viewpoints from evangelical Christians, for example, who have a very different understanding of what it means to be a Christian. I would say one of the main issues in the UK at the moment, where faith and campaigning intersect, is around conversion practices. And I would describe conversion practices as any intervention that seeks to change, cure, or suppress these sexual orientation or gender identity of an individual. And that's something which is really shocking. It's terrible that it's still happening today in 2025 in the UK. And there was a survey in 2018 which found that 7% of LGBTQIA plus people have actually either been offered conversion practices, or have been exposed to them. And for trans people, they're twice as likely to have been offered it. So religion can be something which or organized religion in the UK does have negative aspects to it. And in terms of the equalities movement in the UK, when it came to same-sex marriage in 2013, a lot of the opposition actually came from Church of England bishops. So it's not the easiest situation to navigate as a queer Christian.
So we learned, I was going to say a few episodes ago, it was at the start of this season, from Jason Jones, the activist, about how evangelical Christian organisations in the US, backed by big money, billionaires, billions and billions of dollars, are sending people out, I'm going to say activists, but there is another term that it's just escaped my mind at the moment, into the Caribbean and into African and black countries around the world to stoke homophobia. And that, for many people, becomes the enduring image of Christianity. This is not meant by way of attack, by the way, because I understand it's much more nuanced than that, but what is the difference between the evangelical Christian organizations that we see and, say, for example, the established, one of the original sort of Protestant churches, the Anglican Church?
Well, I mean, the Church of England has made significant progress. In 2022 and 2023, we endorsed same-sex blessings within our churches in the UK. But I think when it comes to...
But not marriage.
Sadly, not marriage. That's something that I've been campaigning for within the Church of England, and across the Anglican Communion. Some of the other churches within the communion have endorsed same-sex marriage. For example, the US Episcopal Church in 2015, and also the Scottish Episcopal Church and the Church of Scotland. But I'm not trying to make any apologies for the Church of England. The same-sex blessings that we have, they could have been implemented in a much better way, and the Church of England remains out of step with society in a lot of areas. What is going on globally is that we are seeing money coming from the religious far right, and it's using religion as a pretext for homophobia, but it's also using religion across really the different strands of the culture wars, whether it's the Republican Party in the USA, whether it's the Giorgio Meloni's Brothers of Italy party, or whether it's Viktor Orban in Hungary, all of them are using religion as a pretext to undermine trans rights, diversity and inclusion initiatives, LGBTAIQ plus rights generally, but also women's reproductive rights. And they've been doing that for a number of decades. Hungary is particularly interesting. When Viktor Orban came to power in 2010, he created a constitution where same-sex marriage was explicitly banned. And during Pride Month, the previous March, so in March, April 2025, he tried to ban Budapest Pride from taking place. Mm-hmm. And that was Budapest Pride ended up being
it was
very successful on mm-hmm. on the 28th of June, but I worry that there may be a further right-wing backlash within that country surrounding that. So I think that the problem is the weaponization of Christian beliefs and using them as a pretext for a conservative agenda, which ranges from rolling back trans rights to preventing women from accessing abortion services. And it's something which is incredibly dangerous.
I guess really the far right around the world adapts to the local positions of what they'd seem to be conservative elements in that society. And it, as I view it, in different societies, it manifests in different ways. In the United States and maybe in the UK to a certain extent, they'll co-opt Christianity in order to say that we stand for traditional values. In some societies in the Middle East, for example, people may have co-opted Islam and gone for a more extreme interpretation of Islam. Certainly the current Israeli government is a far-right government. It certainly has super far-right figures in it, and I feel that that is what's dragged the behaviour of the state of Israel into the current position it's in. So I guess that all around the world, religion is kind of co-opted and by various people for various different reasons, and it has done since for thousands of years. the values that the people, for example, Christian, let's focus for now just on Christian evangelicals. Obviously, you don't represent that group of people, but I just want to hear your take on it. The values that these people talk about, that they claim that homosexuality is at odds with the teachings and writings in the Bible. My answer to that is, which Bible are we talking about? There's numerous versions of the Bible. And how are you able to square your values personally with those claims that homosexuality is condemned in the Christian text?
Well, Jesus's message is ultimately one of love. So in the New Testament, there isn't anything which explicitly condemns LGBTQIA plus relationships. If we go back to the Old Testament, there are in Leviticus within the there's it's possible to there are parts of Leviticus which specifically prohibit homosexuality, but there are other parts as well which say that people shouldn't, for example, eat shellfish, mm-hmm. or people shouldn't wear clothing made with a certain type of fabric. They form a section of the holiness code within Leviticus, and that's just one small part of the Bible, and it's actually hugely anachronistic when you have a look at the other things which are prohibited. Jesus's message was ultimately one of love, and that's a love that that encompasses queer people as well. And it's wrong that these texts are being misused and weaponized in that way. And it's particularly dangerous when it's being done by politicians as well.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think if Jesus was alive today, what particular causes would he promote? What kind of person would he be?
I think Jesus would have been at the front of every gay rights march. I think he would have been campaigning on social justice issues, whether that was helping asylum claimants. I think he would have been helping the homeless. I think he would have been battling climate change. I think he would have been trying to reach out to the marginalized in society, people who are struggling, and trying to help them and make the world a better place.
Of what political hue do you think it would have been? Do you think it would have been progressive?
yes. Jesus was incredibly progressive 2,000 years ago, and we see that throughout the throughout the New Testament. So I think he would have been progressive today, and that's how I would like to see our mainstream churches, not just the Church of England, model themselves. There should be institutions which are seeking to help the poorest in our society and help the most marginalised, so that their lives can be changed in a positive way.
I think we could all agree that the single biggest issue in the world today is the activities of the State of Israel. Jesus lived in that part of the world. What do you think his take would have been on it?
That's a really interesting question. I mean, what we need to see in that entire region is for the heat to be taken out of the situation. My own view is that Israel needs to stop its aggressive behavior. We need ceasefires in this region, a return to a two-state solution, but we also need genuine hope for the people who have been wrongly displaced from Gaza, and that's going to require the destruction that has taken place across the region is going to take a huge amount of money to fix. So it's something that the entire world has a responsibility for. In terms of living with HIV and my Christianity, I'm aware that on the General Synod, being openly gay and openly living with HIV, it's certainly controversial. It generates a lot of reactions. So some of those reactions are actually positive, and I think I've been able to maybe change a few people to change the attitude of some of the other people who are elected to the Church of England's General Synod. But I think particularly over the past 2 or 3 years, almost all LGBTQIA plus identities, where whether it's sort of marching in a pride parade or holding hands with your partner, that it's increasingly become something more contested, something which is political, just because of what we're seeing globally in terms of the culture wars. I mean, looking at a country like Italy, where there's a real backlash against surrogacy and LGBTQ plus parenting.
In a very cruel way, actually, at times, like it carried out in the cruelest of manners at times.
Being a parent is something wonderful and special, but a lot of our identities have been politicized, and to a certain extent, I have chosen to write about being gay and living with HIV, and I do media interviews, and I'm also very fortunate to have been elected to the General Synod and to have different platforms. What makes me really sad is how trans identities have been politicized, and for most trans people, that wasn't anything. They've been subjected to such a harsh backlash, and they've done nothing wrong, nothing other than trying to live their lives authentically. And the entire gender critical movement is seeking to, going to
erase them.
I think it is seeking to erase trans, non-binary and intersex identities. Certainly that's what some gender critical campaigners, I think, would like. But even going to the bathroom, sadly, has become a political act for some trans people, and it's something really sad about what is happening in the UK and across Europe and also in the US. We need to do everything we can to protect trans youth, trans people, their access to healthcare, and ensure that we try to stop this rollback on trans rights as much as possible. And importantly, I think we have to listen to trans people. And it's such a rapidly situation, and find out what it is that they need, whether that's writing to whether it's writing to your local MP and telling them that that you've got trans friends, they're experiencing discrimination, that they're frightened. Explaining to your MP that by not doing more to advocate for trans people, they're not representative of your views, and being trans inclusive is something that is integral to how you're going to be casting your vote.
Nigel Farage looks... Look, here's how I think what might happen over the next few years in the UK. I think that right now, if we were to look at... I'm just going to bring up some figures here to tell you what I'm talking about. Okay, so Jeremy Corbyn set up, and there's a new Corbyn-led party, supposedly, although Jeremy Corbyn didn't seem to know much about it the other day. And here's the current voting intentions in the UK from the latest polling last week. SNP 2%, Green, I'm doing it the wrong way around so we get to the conclusion. SNP 2%, Greens 5%, Lib Dem 14%, Corbyn Party 10%, Conservatives 20%, Labour 20%, Reform UK 27%. So on that, the party that looks, I mean, it depends on the distribution of the votes, but the party there that has the greatest share of the vote, and if that's reflected in the first-past-the-post system, we'll have a Reform government. And my take on that is that Labour is so unpopular at the moment for a multitude of reasons, largely communication-based, that we'll get this Reform government. And my take on that is that they will tank us economically, and then we'll move into another space. God knows what that is. Nigel Farage said
recently. This is his new ground that he's moving reform onto, that gay marriage should never have happened. He's also made noises about women's right to choose. What would your message be to Nigel Farage when it talks about trying to bring up the issue of gay marriage as not being settled, as somebody that is in the Church of England, in a senior position in the Church of England? What would your response be to that?
I think firstly, in terms of reform, I completely agree with you that they're a danger. And in the council elections that we had a few months ago, I think they got 823 yeah. councillors. So it's not impossible that Nigel Farage could be in power. Mm-hmm. I think it might be the where I see the real danger is if there's a conservative reform coalition, right. perhaps one headed by Robert Jenrick mm-hmm. and Nigel Farage. But it could well be the case mm-hmm. that if the as you point out, if Nigel Farage has more ends up with the most seats, that he could be the leader of this country. And my message to him is that the cultural issues he's campaigning on, whether it's trying to demean trans people, whether it's eroding LGBTQIA plus rights like gay marriage, whether it's trying to scapegoat asylum claimants and migrants, whether it's using net zero as another cultural issue, as a senior Anglican, the way that he behaves is exactly the opposite to core Christian values. He should aim to treat people with dignity and respect. He shouldn't be seeking to roll back human rights. And what he is doing is hugely irresponsible, and his populism is the antithesis of Christianity.
So you work across a number of issues. You're not the same kind of activist, but I'm just going to raise another rather famous activist who moved along from just LGBTQ plus rights issues and then became more interested in the rights of asylum seekers and turning us into a more fairer society, and campaigning for the rights of people for loads of different reasons around the world. Peter Tatchell, very different approach, but someone who has also taken the LGBTQ or initially gay male focus and opened it up to a whole host of issues. You work across issues like homelessness, asylum, and international human rights. What do you see there as the through line connecting them all? Is there one?
So for me, I've always tried to campaign in areas where I feel I have, where I can make a difference, and where I have some expertise. So initially, I started off campaigning around HIV, and I very quickly learned that it wasn't just gay and bi men who were impacted by HIV. So I began campaigning for women who were living with HIV, because if we were to go back 10 or 12 years, people weren't really talking about women living with HIV. I then learned that there were a lot of asylum claimants living with HIV, and that encouraged me to learn more about immigration and asylum. And at first I was campaigning for better access for asylum claimants to HIV services, but then I started to campaign around asylum and immigration as well. And it was a similar situation in terms of homelessness. In early 2015, I hosted an event with the Albert Kennedy Trust, and it was really interesting because one of the young people who they had been helping, he'd been sofa surfing, and he'd been rejected by his parents on account of his sexuality, and sadly he'd been diagnosed with HIV. So that was how I then became interested in homelessness. And in terms of international human rights, it was because as I started campaigning around LGBTQIA plus rights, I just started to notice that these things were all interconnected, that there was it was often the same people who were trying to oppress LGBTQ plus people. And we've touched earlier on some of the methods that they use, and I started to see that there were sort of similar methods that they were using, whether it was Viktor Orban in Hungary, or for example, Nigel Farage in the UK. I started to see that there were patterns to what they were doing. And I think my faith also encouraged me to speak out on international human rights as well. From around 2019 and 2020, I started speaking out about the challenges the Uyghur Muslims are facing in China. And I was initially asked to comment on what it was like for Christians in China, because there are Christians in China who are persecuted as well. But I became very interested in helping the Uyghur Muslim population, and just trying to highlight what they were facing, because I was so shocked by it. And then when China very aggressively started to clamp down in Hong Kong, it linked to what it was the same sort of authoritarian messages that they were using, that I'd encountered in terms of their disrespect for human rights, with the Uyghur Muslims. And then I sort of became interested in protecting human rights to a degree in Taiwan as well. So it's been quite an organic journey for me, in that I've been asked to comment on different issues, and then I've learned about a country and an area, and I've then spoken out.
Right, Philip, thanks so much for that chat today. It was powerful, honest, thought provoking. And really interesting to hear the perspective of somebody that is, I'm going to say, a moderate member of the established church in the UK, and how you navigate the kind of intersection between your activism, your HIV, and occupying that position in the Church of England. It's been a fascinating chat. Thank you so much.
Well, did you know, and it was really wonderful chatting to you.
Same to you as well.
Thank you very much.
That was Philip Baldwin. He's a Synod member. The Synod is the sort of overarching kind of democracy, that's the word, democratic institution of the Church of England. That sounds like the two things don't belong next to each other, but it's a thing. He's an activist, and someone who's chosen to stay where many people would have walked away. What the Church of England just did and didn't do, by the way, matters, because for millions of LGBTQ plus people, religion isn't just something you leave behind, it's something that you carry. It shapes your childhood, your family, your identity. And when institutions like the church send mixed signals, it hurts. Philip reminds us that fighting from within comes at a cost, but also it can make a difference as well. If this episode hit home, please share it. Let people know what's really happening behind the headlines. And thank you for helping me get Outcast World another nomination, this time for Best Interviews Podcast at the British Podcast Awards. I'm Graham Smith. This is Outcast World. See you next time.
Stay with me. This is incredibly simple. If you've ever used Grindr, Googled something rather personal, or posted anything political, your data is already being tracked and sold. Think about that. A VPN can make you a lot safer. NordVPN takes about 2 minutes to set up, one click to turn on, and it just runs in the background. There's no effort after that. It's consistently voted number one across a load of metrics for consumers. It's fast, it's secure, and there's no drop-offs. Outcast World listeners can get up to 75% off NordVPN right now, which brings it down to under £3 a month. Go to outcastworld.net. Top of the page, tap the link, then you're done. Outcastworld.net for up to 75% off NordVPN.